former friends.
Hey, everybody, welcome. New show. Well, not that new. Welcome to Drones, Code, and People. Got a full house today. The studio is a Grand Forks Best Source. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it over to the one, the only, Johnny Ryan.
Thank you.
Should we do some of that for you there, bud?
Sure.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
You know, we've all been sitting here BSing for a little bit, talking about names and nicknames and who calls who what and where and all that stuff. Johnny Fingers, what? How? I've heard you called that.
Yeah, it started. Tommy Canville likes to give me a lot of nicknames, but
he's a nickname giver guy.
He'll be so mad if I tell the story part of it without him here to say the other side of it. But
that's even better. Yeah.
When I first met him, he said, "Yeah, we got to give you a nickname. We give everyone nicknames." And I said, "I already have a nickname." He said, "No, you don't get to pick your own." I said, "I already have one." He said, "What's that?" I said, "Top Shelf." He said, "You got to be kidding me."
I remember that, yeah.
And I said, "No, that was my nickname, high school hockey." He's like, "No, I don't believe any of that." He's like, I'm best friends with the coaches. He's like, "Well, we'll see about that." So then Tommy and I, he's like, "I'm going to call you Quick Fingers." I'm like, "All right, you know, for typing and coding." Mm-hmm. And, you know, because you see him on my computer typing so fast and changing screens and whatever. And then it kind of evolved to Fingers and then kind of Fangers. But then we went to Las Vegas for the UND Minnesota Gopher game. The first guy we ran into in the lobby was Tark Howard, former hockey coach.
Yeah.
And just Tommy just went right over, "Hey." And before he could even ask a question, Tark looks at me and says, "Hey, what's up, Top Shelf?"
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so that was... the asterisk to that is I aimed for Top Shelf. That didn't mean that I hit it every time.
Yeah. How cool playing for Tark. My kid played for him, and you guys always had such good hockey teams, too.
That was magical. Yeah. The absolute best.
What year did you graduate?
2003. That was quite a while ago.
Yeah, quite a while. The guy's talking about quite a while ago.
Back then, so.
Yeah, I just had Tommy and I just had our 40th class reunion last summer.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you talk about a while.
Yeah.
You got a whole crew here with you today. You want to do some introductions?
Sure. I mean, I might just have you guys introduce yourself.
Yeah.
We got the guys in the studio here from Bifrost Manufacturing. They have that and a couple other companies that we'll talk about here. But, yeah, we have Will and we have Aaron here, Aaron Hall. Maybe just introduce yourself as what you do.
Yeah, so just small business development. So I'm one of the founders of Bifrost Manufacturing, also Sundog Mining. Mm-hmm. A couple people might have heard of, but small business.
Okay, so Bifrost, Sundog, if people don't know, what do you do?
So Sundog, we have to keep... what I would call the world's like worst computers alive.
Okay.
In the world's harshest environment. So
okay.
We mine Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
So really what we do is it's just co-located data centers, right?
Okay.
So, and then Bifrost Manufacturing is just additive advanced manufacturing. So when we started Bifrost, we wanted to do like your typical manufacturing, like the welding, the plasma, all that. Uh-huh. But we also wanted to like put our own spin on things, right? So like, you know, we kind of have been known as to be innovators, and what we came out of is we wanted to get into like the 3D printing space.
Mm-hmm.
Any kind of composite materials, that kind of thing.
How do you come up with the name Bifrost?
Oh man, I don't even remember how that came on, man. But we're just—I
mean, it's perfect for around here.
Yeah, we're thinking like something Nordic, and you know, would kind of fit in, and you know, like it's like the rainbow bridge, that like the magic that keeps like joins the world together. And mm-hmm. We're like, I mean, all right, that kind of fits, man. So
I thought it was Bifrost.
Yeah, for fun.
I got you.
You know, you talk about the Nordic thing. I'm looking at some of the artwork.
That,
I mean, it kind of fits in.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's a statue of Odin in Norway.
Sure,
so
sure.
It does fit, I guess, the motif. So it kind of went where my brain went is like, you know, we give it a name and it stuck. So.
You know, I don't feel as dumb now, Johnny, being around.
That's our goal.
You guys here?
We were hired by the studio.
About a tattoo. So.
Yeah, we lower the bar. You know,
your studio
that's
actually
goal.
Hired us to lift you up.
That's our part-time job. Is we'll send you an invoice for that later.
Oh,
that's how we give back to the community.
Man, yeah, the give back. We give back.
We keep it low so you can.
Oh man,
up to the bar.
This is going to be a fun show. I can tell right now.
Will, why don't you hop on the mic? I know you're eager.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. So I'm Will. I just recently joined the team here with Bifrost. Came over from Northrop Grumman. So did a lot of research and development over there, putting out fires. Yeah, had several roles out there. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's a tinker of all sorts. How many trees are you growing on your property?
In the backyard.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I think there's like over 150 trees.
Yeah. Are you like a tree planter guy? Do you like doing that stuff?
So, yeah, it's kind of one of those things that focuses the ADHD-er in me and everything. So, yeah, I'm usually cloning, splicing, collecting seeds.
Just making hybrid new trees, you know.
So, really? Do you happen to have a business card with you? Because I plan on planting a lot more, and I'd like to get a hold of you and pick your brain. My backyard is an old driving range. I live on an old golf course.
So I have 6 acres.
Yeah.
FYI.
I need like a wall planted. Like a fence.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Yeah,
come by. Yeah,
shelter belt.
Yeah. Yeah. Either the deer get them or...
the deer will get... Yeah, that's a problem. How do you meet these guys?
Jeez. Craigslist, I think. No.
Does that still exist?
We were friends on MySpace back in the day. We both had a mutual friend named Tom. So, actually, we do have mutual friends. A lot of people named Tom around here. But yeah. No, I don't know where we originally met. I met Will through a good friend, Mike Friedolf, so, you know, mm-hmm. through Northrop and...
Yeah, shameless plug. Mike's running for office. You guys know that?
He's been on the show for it.
Yeah, we should talk about Mike. Mike should win. Yeah.
Vote Mike. You will. We'll get him back in, too, if he wants to.
Mike, if you're watching, I'll send you an invoice.
I'm going to keep hitting the button. Where
this is the invoice guy.
Yeah, Mike Friedolf. Mike Friedolf, yeah.
And you know what?
I missed the thing last night. I knew it was there, and I forgot all about it. I know you saw him there.
No, I'm kidding.
You must have had a few, too.
We, you know, when we started this, I think we had met a couple times, but, you know, Sundog wasn't really, like, really ingrained with the mm-hmm. Hive and the whole ecosystem for drones. And, you know, we started, you know, doing this flexible manufacturing, and everybody's like, hey, you gotta get into the drone industry. You got to get into the rapid prototyping here. You guys, like, what you guys do kind of feeds into that. And, you can't know drones without knowing Johnny.
Right. But now, again, a lot of this is way over my head. Flexible manufacturing. Sure. What do you mean by that?
Well, so we built this in a way where, you know, we saw that, you know, supply chains have been disrupted by whatever, you know, case, whether it's COVID or whatnot.
Sure.
And, you know,
we've seen a lot of it.
We do just-in-time parts, any kind of additive manufacturing, and we set ourselves up to, like, reduce engineering timelines with, like, really high-end 3D scanners and whatnot.
Okay,
okay. So what we didn't realize is that, you know, coming into this industry is that it really benefits the drone industry as well. So if you have a drone and you're essentially trying to create a product and fix a solution, you're changing things on this drone as you go, right?
Yep,
it's called prototyping.
Yep.
And what we're allowed, able to do is we can change with 3D scanners rapidly, right? So you're not machining parts. It doesn't get in the schedule and take weeks. It's kind of like a file print kind of thing.
Okay, yeah. So if I can dumb this down a little, if I may, I'm involved with dirt track racing. I'm a dirt track racing announcer. During the pandemic, there was a huge issue with getting parts, race car parts,
100%.
Where it would take months to get stuff that normally would take a week or two. So this would kind of fill that niche, possibly, or am I completely off?
100%. You know, and automotive was actually one of the ones we talked about when we got into it. So we got a couple gearheads in the office, the machinists, and they're hobbyists, right? You know, one of them's building Le Mans. And so that's kind of why we're like, hey, well, you know, we can build these just-in-time parts. I mean,
They're not mass-produced parts by any means. They're just, this is what I need.
Right. And you know, typically, anytime you have an engineer touch anything, you have a lot of cost.
Right.
But if you're prototyping, you've raised money for these costs, and if you have the ability to kind of rapidly prototype, we don't spend a lot of time on it.
Okay.
So your costs go down.
Sure.
So, you know, we were looking at, we can print in aluminum, we can print in titanium. Oh, wow. So when you're talking about, like, old school, like 1960s era car parts that no longer exist, you're looking at looking at headers and stuff.
And that's a huge business nowadays.
Well, we had kind of pointed it at ag.
Right.
You got an old tractor, you know, can't farm without a part. You know, we bring it in, throw it on the table. We can scan it and replicate it. reverse engineer it. But, you know, what we didn't realize is how well that applied to like every other industry as well.
So when you're, when you talk about printing, it's not just something that looks like this.
No. I mean, it is.
Because so, this is what, you know, yeah.
So, you know, we are, you know, I call them a band of misfits, right? Mm-hmm. And I say that lovingly, but
oh, sure.
I will tell you, we have printed a ridiculous amount, like a ridiculous amount of D&D minis.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So okay. there's stuff like that that gets printed on those printers too.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Okay. I mean, it's funny to see, like we have a couple guys at the Hive that work for Thread, and you know, the guys are normally pretty quiet, kind of a little bit more reserved. The minute we put in all these 3D printers, I mean, just everyone's out of their shell. And then I go, because they kind of have to just put themselves out there when you walk in and see what they're printing. It's like looking into someone's brain. It's like, did you need the third dragon of the day?
Yeah.
You know, but they have 100%. Them on their desk and they love it. And,
oh, wow. 100%.
You know, but then they take it to the next level. But I mean, I think Aaron's spot on with the in-time manufacturing. Like when I was building my first prototype for, and more than a prototype, but like first version of production, like commercial grade drone that could basically fly itself. The first time I built it, the parts were easy to get. The second time I built it, they started getting a little bit weirder. As I got closer to the finished product, it was like my project became just more kind of production ready, but the parts became completely unavailable. And a lot of them are sourcing from China. So carbon fiber, you know, whatever widget it is for a drone, all of a sudden they would come and I'd order from the same exact people, try to find some consistencies, and it would come, sometimes it would come just like in the scariest looking package with no, I mean, there's no, you know, there's no quality control. I really don't know what I'm getting. And basically it became, okay, we need to rethink this. And my partners in California, we basically bought machinery that isn't even close to what Aaron has when there's a collective behind it and a company behind it. So now it's like we have companies that want to literally produce these parts that would take, you know, I could get 8 out of 10 of the parts and I couldn't even get 2 out of 10. All of them can be made by Aaron's company, basically, in my mind, other than some of the electronics, which I could source in the U.S. But the just the physical parts like carbon fiber, you know, they don't have to be like indestructible, but they have to be available. And it just became impossible to find these. And now there's even regulation from China's end where they don't want to export these parts because the innovation that can happen. Like, it's amazing we can build in your backyard and crash into your own house.
Okay.
So, if you have the parts, you know.
So now, say you can't get a part, and you are going to manufacture your own part. Specs, all that kind of stuff, do you go off of what they have or what you've been used to ordering, or do you have to figure this out on your own? And if you do go off of what they're doing, is there a copyright or trademark infringements that you have to worry about? Or as long as you don't sell it, who cares?
Well, the best part about it, so my background is coding, but it goes, and hardware as well. So there's open source code that, you know, almost anything in code has been written before. I'm sorry if someone says they have something they're going to patent, which I worked at Target Corporate. They patent, you know, triple click on a button is a patentable thing, you know, and they got patents for that. And that's great. But there's hardware, and I basically use all open source hardware, all open source operating system, the brains behind flying a drone. That's all a community that basically releases it to the public. So I don't have to write code that's going to, you know, auto detect like how high it should fly in certain conditions. There's hardware as well that can be 3D printed, and those are open source. The parts themselves, the specs are, it's nothing really that hasn't been done before. It's like propellers in a frame, and you know, you can basically make your own really quick. And if you want to change it for some reason, really the biggest thing is if you change it, weights change, shape changes.
Mm-hmm.
But this open source software accounts for all of that.
Oh, so, wow.
You know, if you have 6 motors, they're going to factor in what changes. I mean, it's got a supercomputer brain, essentially. So, I mean, he's filling a huge, huge gap. These guys are filling a huge, huge gap. We have other companies that want to kind of do, well, you know, basically between this and the big, big military drones, make them all here. So it's really a hotbed of opportunity. And the biggest opportunity is independence, because if we're not buying these parts from overseas, I mean, that just changes the entire game.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I mean, at some point, it's not just like a disruption of your supply chain, right? At some point, it's national security. So if the government's funding it, like where's the manufacturing get done? So when you have like what Johnny's talking about is we have really strong IP here, right? So, like, we have the ideas, we have the designs, and then now we have to kind of bring up the manufacturing. So we're trying to use, so you know, you have a part, right? And that part can look like anything. You can come in with your drone kind of under your arm and, you know, like cut out a styrofoam, you know?
Yeah.
And we can scan it and get it in and throw it into just a CAD program. And then we can help you if it's not your, you know, if you don't have an STL or you don't have the file itself, we can help you design it. We can help you put, you know, the measurements on there. You know, Killian, the CEO, has a really long background in production manufacturing. So, like, he understands, like, that there's a gap between, you know, the design and then the actual manufacturing.
Sure.
And what that does is that drives costs down. Because he goes, well, if you change these parameters in a certain way, based on his experience, your costs are going to go down. So we can take that and we can take your idea and we kind of make it your own, right? We can make it kind of bring it to market in a way.
Yeah. And when you put it that way, a lot of people, the thing in their brain is, I need this part. I need it now. And we might as well make a whole bunch of them. But then you got to start thinking about that stuff. Okay. Are we going to make money? You know, how efficient is this? And yeah, I get it. We need it. But are we going to pay, you know, that much money for it when we don't really have to?
100%.
Well, I think you're going to add value too with people come in to, you know, talk to Aaron and Will about a project. They're going to be able to say, hey, hold on a second. You know, we're not part of your company. We're not giving you business advice, but you should probably know that these six other projects did not work because of this cost with what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Maybe you need a shift, or maybe this isn't even something that's feasible. You know, it's not just like, let's make all these things. It's like, hey, wait a second.
Yeah,
tried this. This is not going to work because of XYZ or the cost of electricity or the cost of the part or the carbon fiber, whatever it is.
You know? So if somebody comes in with an idea and you just go, well, you know, that sounds great, but been there, done that. It's not, I'm going to tell you right now, it's not the way to go. You don't have to do that. You can make a butt ton of money not doing that, but that's not what you're all about. Let's do this the right way the first time, or am I a little off there?
Yeah, no, that's accurate. I mean, that's kind of our reputation.
Sure.
Doing things right.
And that's what you want.
And kind of standing by your word at the end of the day. You know, the other side of this is this, if we need an extra vehicle, like if you need an extra step in that process and like, hey, this is my business and say I'm an engineer, right? And I've developed a solution to a problem, but I don't know anything about business, raising money, anything like that. Mm-hmm. We can step in. So Sundog acts often as an equity investor too. So we can kind of help you and bring you to market in an equitable way. And we've been known to buy equity. So if it works, we really stand behind you. If it doesn't work, we're like, you know, maybe just not the right place, right?
Yeah. So, is there a lot of learning the hard way?
Oh yeah.
In what you guys do?
Well, I mean, you're in a grassroots industry, right? So everything is new. Metal printing has been around for a long time, but on the production scale, like it's fairly new. Like it's not common to go to Young's Manufacturing and see a 3D metal printer, right? Mm-hmm. So it's still relatively new. There's kinks to get ironed out. There's some things that perform better than others, right? And it's a learning process.
Is there a lot of one step forward, two steps back, or just learn the hard way and make it up to the next step?
Honestly, I've found that we're insulated by a lot of demand.
Okay.
Right? So, like, we fill a lot of roles for a lot of people. So we haven't really suffered from, you know, two steps forward or, you know, one step forward, two steps back so bad. But I could see that being an issue in the industry. But, again, I'm like, that's my thing, man. I'm always in niche markets. So I almost expect it at this point.
And, you know, the thing is I don't know you guys, but the vibe I got from the 40 minutes or whatever we spent together before, I don't think you guys are into that one step forward, two steps back thing. I think that would just be a total bummer downer for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of we joked a lot, you know, but I mean,
that's why they were 40 minutes early.
Yeah. We got nothing else to do because, you know, two steps back. No, but at the end of the day, man, like innovation is about failure.
Yeah. Well, sure.
So, you know, I don't see it as two steps back. I just see it as part of the process. And do we fail? Like, yeah, all the time, man. Everybody wants to talk about the business ideas that go through, but not the ones that you like.
Really, yeah. Is that kind of like the term trust the science?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
you know,
trust the process.
Right.
It's like, it's just going to be, you know, failing's going to be part of the process, and you know, so is working through it. You know?
Well, it's about the chase.
Yeah,
the chase.
I made a joke.
Hey, John, it's about the friends we made along the way.
Yeah, right? I won't name the other person, but a good friend of mine. We joked, how many companies could we start in one summer that just we drive right into the ground? So now my wife won't let me start any more companies.
The summer of love, we like to call that.
Mr. Unknown.
Yeah.
Summer of Love.
I love that.
Spot on. Netflix is definitely going to. I don't know who's going to play me on Netflix.
I wanted to ask Will this. We kind of took a little peek in there. What is all of that you've got in front of you? For one thing, I've never seen anybody write so small.
It's feedback for your boss. Didn't you know that?
I'm the boss, so.
Well, it's for you.
Oh, okay. But what do you keep in there?
You know, honestly, so it's a small book, mm-hmm. so it has to be able to fit in my pocket. And, you know, quite honestly, when a good idea comes, you never know when it's going to come. So,
sure.
You know, I carry these books with me all the time. You know, I'll learn something new. And, you know, I was like, oh, hey, that's a really good idea to solve a particular type of, you know, problem. You know, so, I mean, this is, you know, collections of, you know, things that I've been working on since I was like maybe six.
Okay, because I saw him bring it out, and Johnny, I was wondering if he was right in there, like that Robert isn't very smart. Hello, what the hell are we doing here?
No. On a scale of 0 to 2.
Thanks. No, I mean, I'm going to be the first to admit, I know what drones are. I know what they can do, what they're capable of, but you guys are opening up a whole new world to me, not just with the drones, but everything else. And so this is, I'm trying to soak this in. I feel like I'm back in middle school or something, you know?
Welcome to middle school.
Well, whatever it is, but I'm hoping to learn as we go. I mean, this is fascinating stuff for me.
This is a science class here. So, I haven't talked much yet, but don't really know too much about drones. Mm-hmm. Know a little bit, but I'm hoping what I bring to the table with Bifrost and stuff is kind of the more crazy mm-hmm. stuff.
So right now,
if the 3D printed guitar you guys walked in with the other day, I was blown.
You guys,
away.
No way.
Yeah. I think he just shipped that out and sold it. That 3D guitar. So Killian used to build guitars, and that was kind of a. Home project. He's got a list of people that are like, hey, build me a guitar, and he's like, wow, we got these 3D printers.
It'd be tough to not just make guitars full time for Bifrost.
I'm telling you, man, the stuff that goes through there, man, you'll be like making custom guitars with a Mandalorian helmet on, you know, like
wow,
seriously, like the stuff that comes off of those printers, like it's just the imagination. You know, we're just a big maker space, and you know, yeah.
Oh wow. Holy. Now, see, I wish we would have, I would have known they were coming before. We would have had you guys email us some stuff because we could show these pictures on the screen of what you do. But
maybe.
I was going to say, I don't know. I'm not sure about that. I'm actually looking at Aaron here. Like, I'm not entirely sure what I'm allowed to talk about or what I'm allowed to say.
Well, Will's essentially be our senior engineer for research and development.
Okay.
And when we got into this, you know, our fixes were relatively realistic and simple. And, you know, the reaction from the market was you got to get into drones. And then it's like you got to get into other things and more theoretical, like composites and vehicles that aren't real yet, mm-hmm. but will mm-hmm. be. And Will kind of fits that niche really well. And so we're super blessed to have him. He's like the king nerd down there. He just doesn't know it yet.
Thank you for the kind words.
For real, man. Like those guys look up to you. Like I'm really excited for what's going to come out of there. That's like our strategy is like open this up, like open up the innovation, right? Like give these guys the freedom to like exercise their minds and see what comes out of it, man. I've been like super impressed. Just I'm along for the ride at this point, you know.
So you say free will, freedom. Do they cut you loose? Can you pretty much?
Now I can. It can be tricky sometimes to do innovation, especially when you're doing a lot of really you're pushing thresholds.
Things that haven't been done before.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I don't know. I hope I don't get arrested by the FBI or CIA or anybody like that. But you know, some of the technologies that you know I really want to develop are probably things we won't see in the public eye for another 20, 30 years.
Really?
And stuff. So, I mean, these are highly sophisticated types of technology. And, yeah, one of the biggest reasons why I was so excited to jump on with Bifrost, I love Northrop. And so uh-huh. I loved working with them. They're awesome stuff. Grand Sky, incredibly supportive team. I mean, they're all awesome. Bifrost, so quite literally, not literally, kind of took the chains off to speak, I guess, to kind of, you know, explore different things. I mean, to give one example, you know, I always considered myself to be, you know, kind of the trailer park version of Tony Stark, I guess.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have his money. I don't have his resources. So, you know, and Aaron's heard this story like probably 10, 15 times. So, dude, I'm sorry, man.
I don't even know where this one's going, honestly.
Oh, no, you do. Yeah, you'll know here in a couple of seconds. Yeah, you know, so, you know, I love, yeah. So, kind of a background with me. I'll probably be the dumbest smart person you might see and stuff. You know, I don't consider myself smart, but I have curiosity.
Jesus, I love you should be in my seat right now, dude.
Yeah, so I mean, as an undergrad and stuff, I had some amazing opportunities to work with NASA. I worked on Type 2 linear supernova or novae. I can never pronounce that. Extrasolar planets. I got to work with like some of the biggest minds out there. You know, when it came to astrophysics, you know, learned about nuclear physics, nuclear genesis. It piqued my interest. I love, you know, radioisotopes.
Yeah.
So anyways, this was, you know, something that I kind of wanted to play around with to see if it was even possible. But, you know, I wanted to see if it was possible. And this is the part that might give me trouble, maybe not. I don't know. It's taking depleted uranium-238 and then running it or using a lot of off-the-shelf parts and pieces to see if I can bump it up to plutonium. You know, 239, which is a radioisotope that's used to power deep space probes and stuff. You know, so it releases some thermal radiation. You feed that thermal radiation through a Peltier or a Seebeck device and generates an electrical current, which powers your systems and stuff like that. So this is going to sound funny, but I mean, the primary nuclear reactor chamber itself is made from a flagpole ball that you see on top of flagpoles. It was a, you know, it had the right thickness. It was the right material. It's neutron cross section, like it's neutron cross section, meaning that it's not going to absorb the neutrons. You know, because I need them to be directed towards the sample itself to actually bump it up a couple notches. You know, so yeah, microwave parts. You know, so I need to generate something that's going to be producing a particle beam. You know, I don't have access to a cyclotron. Those are a little tricky to get by. You know, so. You know, I'll do it a different way. I'll use a magnetron that I pulled from five microwaves and stuff. I'll phase them together and take that electron beam and then run it through a series of metallic lenses that'll generate this particle that I'll need to bump up.
He just keeps going. Like,
so, yeah. Once you get me
going. My favorite will, like, activity is you give him, like, a couple beers to loosen him up and a whiteboard. So, honestly, to put this guy in any lane... Any specific lane would be a disservice to like our country because the solutions that are and so, you know, we work in the data center realm and we talk about like direct cooling for, you know, and so like when we go to Will and we're like, hey, what do you know about cooling? You know, we get some like solutions that other people aren't thinking about.
No,
right. So
no.
Putting this guy in any kind of box or any kind of lane and not just a direction to is would I think just be a disservice to like the industry.
So well. I'm calling it right now because of this relationship. He's going to end up having a race car at the track, and you're like, "What did this guy run this on?" You know, it's like, "Oh, it runs off jokes or something." You know?
That's just it. Everything he was talking about, I'm thinking to myself, "Exactly, that's what I was going to say."
Red River,
yeah.
I'm looks like, wow. That just
cricket USB,
man.
He got him.
We got it. You got to come to the racetrack. Tommy Kenville is wondering what is on Johnny's bowling shirt.
I don't know. It's just a cool, fashionable current design. I don't know.
There you go.
It almost looks like a little EyeSight logo, maybe.
You can't stop a trend center, man.
Yeah, like. No. And I think right now with everything that I'm hearing. That's probably all he could come up with, too, because I don't even know what to ask you guys.
We'll give a shout-out. Carson Muth, we are talking about flux capacitors right now. Exclamation.
That's right.
Oh, boy.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Capacitors.
So how did you get hooked up with these guys, then? How did this all work? I mean, because it looks
like... Grand Forks is small enough where people that are curious about just trying stuff, they all run into a wall and hit each other, you know, and in a good way. And I think the overlap here is just amazing because... Just thinking, hey, this sounds like you should be printing drone parts. We should do something. I mean, I asked Aaron, I think, on a Friday. I ran into him. I said, I had this idea. We should partner with the Hive, and maybe we'll like put some equipment in there. And boom, these guys were there like before we even organized formally. Like they set us up with all this great equipment, and now it's, you know, it's just like we move fast. It's like that was quick. Let's do that. Let's do everything that way. If it makes sense, you know, yeah. for things that we don't need to go back and forth. It's like, how many people have I connected you to and you help us with all the machines, but really it just, we're all like tinkers, lifelong learners, you know?
It's like Will. How do you find like the next Will, right? Like you can do interns and you can do like all those kind of programs and cast the net that way. Or you can say, hey, I'm going to put up these maker spaces and just kind of give them a environment in which to to play. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been super beneficial to us with like relatively low cost. Because what happens is they start their prototype down there and they run a couple versions through it, and it's just not robust enough. And they go, hey, you know, we're getting kind of to the meat and potatoes of this thing. What else do we got as far as options? And then they end up calling us and we go, well, we can print this out of SLS. Right, SLA, so we can do resin, we can do nylon 12, we can do like a laser sintering process where it's just a lot more robust. And, you know, without going too far in the weeds, like we can do that at whether it's like a drone ecosystem that fly or, you know, like at Grand Farm, we could create a makerspace where it's drones that do agriculture.
Yeah.
So, you know, it.
Well, I even saw the other day that I took a peek when I was giving a tour to see if the bamboo is running.
And
these guys work super hard, but now they're like fighting to get in early so they can get the machine first, you know?
That's good.
I looked and someone's actually printing one of their production payload shells.
Cool.
Yeah, in the bamboo.
Well, that's the idea. It's like, you know, the printers we sent down there, you know, essentially hobby level.
Yeah.
But they're good enough in which to get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, you know, Will, you had one of these in your office, didn't you? At your lab, your last
Oh, lab. yeah. Oh, so kind of a heads up, you know, when I lived at Northrop, I ran the makerspace there and stuff. And, yeah, we had a bamboo in there that we would use quite frequently.
Right. So, I mean, it's a good starting point. So that was kind of our idea. But we just purchased the Stray Media Building right north of the library. And that's one of the things we want to do there is you know, we reached out to a couple of the high schools and just create kind of like a subscription model, right, where we can host a robotics team. And, you know, it has a couple, tertiary reasons, right? Like all the guys at the office, they're like, we want to build Autobots, you know, like they make sumo bots, Aaron. Do you know what those are? And I'm just like, no, man, is that sumo what you want? Bots. Is that what you want?
I thought it was just because it's close to Happy Joe's.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like, what's the, yeah, what?
Oh, the win for me is right next to the library.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So that's right. Great.
So these maker spaces have been like really good, you know, marketing and just like creating partnerships and networking, like, that we didn't really see as being like, we didn't expect it to be that effective.
Yeah.
Wow. So. I, when you guys were growing up, was it hard for you in school? I mean, I would imagine my teacher, a teacher of yours, all of you going, what the hell are you talking about? Because you guys are this isn't just stuff you pick up in grade school, middle school, or high school, is it?
Well, I mean, I've got like a you know, Greek tragedy of a background. So like, I'm a high school dropout. When you say I didn't go in school, like I didn't finish, man. Like I'll tell you, the only thing, my only saving grace is I'm just too stupid to fail. Like I won't give up. So I like started at UND, and my background is like I the last full grade I completed, I think, was seventh grade. Okay. I cannot do long division.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, were you bored with school?
No, no. We're real poor.
Just wired a little differently, maybe?
No.
Okay. That's,
I mean, maybe Will. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Oh, I'm like, man, I'm here to like fight for these guys and make sure these guys have the tools they need to you know, make the most impact and like kind of unlock that passion, right? You know, so Will like wants to make impact, right?
Yeah.
Like he wants to take these inventions to the next level and like, you know, give life a purpose. And that's kind of my job, is to give them the tools to do it. By no means do I understand any of that.
Okay. Oh, jeez.
Just give me a couple beers and I'll figure it out.
I'm trying. We've had a couple sessions now.
Does he get paid in beers?
Yeah, we've got the understanding beers. Like, I got to have enough where my brain, like, can soak it up, you know?
Sure. Similar story. My wife dropped out of high school. She was bored with it. High school, she got her PhD, that kind of stuff. But I get it. I'm like you think you were back then. I mean, I barely passed freshman math as a senior, which, by the way, my senior year was the only year I made the honor roll. But I only had three classes a day, so it wasn't too bad. But what about you growing up? How was school for you?
Oh, God. I, you know, by any means was not the best student. Yeah. So, you know, I had several learning disabilities, you know. Yeah. I kind of, you know, if there was a previous life and I was selecting this round, apparently I put it on hard mode. You know, because, you know, I was a C, D student, and it had nothing to do with me, you know, just not being interested. Mm-hmm. I was curious, but, mm-hmm. You know, what between the dyslexia and everything else, ADHD, all the fun, mm-hmm. you know, auditory processing disorders, whatever, you know, it just made it really difficult.
Did they call you dumb growing up?
Oh, yeah. I was in the slow remedial classes sure. and everything like that. So, I mean, for any kid out there, and, I mean, this is always my, you know, speech I give to kids out there that are thinking or doubting about their capabilities is like, yeah, don't.
Right,
yeah.
right.
You know, people would be surprised. Yeah, I always think about that quote that Einstein, you know, or what he said, you know, I was like, everybody's a genius. But something about, what was it, a fish or something? Oh, you know, if a fish is made to believe that climbing trees, you know, is a genius, the fish is going to believe they're dumb, you know, their whole right. entire life. So, you know, my goal is to make sure that, we don't lose, you know, our next generation or, you know, kids to this thought that they're dumb.
Does it's funny because we just did a show before you guys came in here a lot about kids and the future, our future. Does that scare you with what's coming up with kids now, or you think we're in a good place?
I don't know, actually. Trying to predict the future at all, because every time I try, I'm made a fool of, which is fine. Yeah, I don't, you know, don't mind being made a fool of. These kids are great. I mean, there's so many kids that like will approach me after, you know, I gave my little, you know, pep talk and everything mm-hmm. like that, and they'll come up to me and, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, and it's like, I didn't realize that was a possibility. You know, I grew up in rural North Dakota,
sure.
know, farming community. I mean, I had, you know, maybe 20 people in my class.
Wow.
You know, so a lot of us are just, you know, we were raised thinking that, like, you know, we're going to be farmers
yeah.
and stuff.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
don't get me wrong, farmers are incredibly important.
Oh, obviously, sure they are.
Duh, right?
Yeah.
But every now and then you're going to get a kid that's like, you know, you know, farming is just not me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to learn how to, you know, I don't know, build a direct energy weapon mm-hmm. to take out, you know, my neighbor's TV because I think it would be funny
right,
because he plays it
right.
too loud at night type of stuff. You know, so, you know, giving kids an option like, hey, you know, it's like, it doesn't matter kind of where you really come from. There's probably a way. Again, like I said, I don't consider myself to be smart. But, you know, I got to do some really, really, really amazing things with my, you know, just learning process. I mean, I got to work with Nobel Prize laureates.
Wow.
I got to work with, you know, again, you know, some of the top minds in the world. Worked at SETI, you know. So if you ever watched the movie Contact,
mm-hmm.
Anybody? Yeah. So Jodie Foster's character is actually, Carl Sagan actually wrote that after, about a real person.
Wow.
Named Jill Tarter, radio astronomer that I got to work with at Hat Creek. You have a radio telescope array out there. They have 42 radio telescopes, and you know they're looking for ET. You know, so it sounds crazy, but you know,
sure,
there's a lot of really cool things there. But I mean, to have this yeah. this really awesome experience to like literally sit next to her and stuff, and I'm asking her the dumbest questions
yeah,
and stuff,
yeah.
and that she was so freaking amazing. I mean, she's so down to earth,
wow.
and she's like, you know, she had no problem whatsoever. You know, the same thing with Frank. Oh my gosh. Frank Drake. There we go.
Yep.
So if you ever heard of like the Drake equation and stuff, it was, you know, a subjective mathematical equation that, you know, calculates the probability of, you know, life out there, complex life and what else. Incredibly down to earth. He actually came here to UND, gave a talk and stuff, and I approached him and he's like, you know, why? He's like, why don't you apply for our SETI internship? I'm like, really? I was like, there's thousands of kids that are applying for that thing. And I was like, there's no way I've got a chance. But, you know, I had incredibly supportive professors and stuff. And
that's big.
Got me in. Or they didn't get me in. They helped. Mm-hmm. they definitely helped me in the way that they were very supportive and, you know, just did really cool things and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I've done everything from I've did everything from doing research on, you know, North America's oldest mummy, Spirit Caveman. I got to do stuff like that.
Wow.
Totally forgot about that.
Oh, did I even tell you that story?
Yeah, that's actually a really cool story.
So my back, you know, background, archaeology, anthropology, and then I did a little, you know, bit of astrophysics again on the side. So I was looking for extrasolar planets using networked ground-based optical telescopes. You know, I got my hands on Keck data, Keck 1 and 2, and started looking at asteroid families and their surface assemblages, you know, so cataloging, you know, asteroids is based off their composition at surface. Yeah, mummies. I worked on, you know, some of, I mean, North America's oldest mummy, intact mummy. Yeah, it's just a really weird background and stuff. So,
what degrees do you have?
I don't even really honestly know. I guess I really haven't looked at my resume. If I had to wager, I guess it's anthropology, archaeology, and then, you know, a thing in space.
Don't
studies.
Even know.
Yeah, I doubt
it. It doesn't even matter. Well,
right no, here. No. I mean, there came right a point where they're like, you're done. It's like, quit taking classes. Yeah, get out of here now.
And you're like, making our professors look dumb.
I got nothing left to give you, sir. You need to carry on.
So, yeah, you graduated and stuff like that. And I'm pretty sure that the degrees are in anthropology, archaeology, and then astrophysics, or space studies, space studies. So,
you know, after talking to him, do you have plenty of qualified applicants that apply at Bifrost? Or, I mean, you know what I mean?
So, I mean, I got a group of guys that were all pretty much handpicked by Killian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're all a little bit like Will.
Sure.
So I feel super blessed by hiring Will. He doesn't know it yet, but like the story he tells and like, you know, the speech he gives to kids and whatnot, it's super empowering because a lot of these guys have been, you know, put down and made fun of for like these traits. And you know, then they look to Will and they're like, oh my God, this whole time it was a superpower.
Right,
and
right.
The guys really do look up to him and they think it's really cool. And I feel like, you know, so like I'm a large employer, right? So like I employ people in more than one industry, and, mm-hmm. and I found that when people like are impassioned and they love their job, that's really when like things blossom.
Yeah. Right.
So Will was kind of strategic hire, right? He was to impassion some of these guys about like these traits and these ideas and these impacts they want to make. And you know, since then it's been super. It's just kind of been eye opening, man. Because like the things we're getting into now, like half of them sometimes I don't even understand, right? Like,
yeah.
Well, that's partially intentional, just in case.
Right, I know. Yeah. They're like, hey, you know, Aaron will BS with you for, you know, hours. Just confuse him, he'll go away, you know? Like,
Johnny, did you ever think that people like the guys here from Bifrost would, you know, even be a part of the hive when this all first started? Or this is something you expected as time went on?
I thought we would do something ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and then after meeting these guys, it's like these guys are the professionals at a different level. We'll just partner with them. You know, I thought originally we'll make our own makerspace, we'll find some other space maybe next door or whatever, and do that. And you know, we'll still have like, you know, coding classes and building drone and stuff like that. But as far as like the parts and that, like it's like I've seen enough where now even with myself, it's like, I'm just not even going to think about it. Like, if there's something I need, I'm going to go with them. If I want to tinker with something, I'm just ask them which one should I buy. And it saves me the time of the rabbit hole of, like, there's a reason that I haven't really gotten into 3D printers that much, partially because I built the CNC machine and my wife is upset that I didn't really, like, build a ton of stuff with it. It was more the excitement of building the machine
for me.
And I, you know, still have that in my shed. But basically, you know, that's kind of how it started. I was going to bring
What's that? Just a CNC machine. Don't worry.
And so, you know, so it's like now it's like, okay, this is great. I didn't have to, you know, like with me, it's like if I want to learn coding language, I'll teach myself and that. And with this, I'm like, great. I don't need to spend all that time like really trying to get to like a medium level on it. They can just pretty much, I can jump in at like halfway through and these guys quickly got us up to speed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even just in a couple weeks, I'm like, now the 3D printer is just so much more understandable, obvious, you know, and then you add things like scanners where you don't have to have someone maybe like, you know, CAD designing it. It's amazing. And they have you definitely have a wall if you don't have the technology. So, I mean, with the city, it's like we were considering buying a 3D printer, looking at different ones. And, you know, obviously like we, you know, have to go through the process for figuring out like justifying buying that. And that was just too slow. And this is a fast option of partnering. And we immediately have three machines now that people love. And I think we're only going to take it to the next level.
Well, I mean, it's super beneficial for both parties, right? Because Johnny's got a real, like, it's super beneficial and additive for the city to build this ecosystem.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So the city has this ecosystem, and the city has been super supportive of any business ventures we've had, right? No matter how, like, in the weeds it's got,
yeah,
right?
They're
super supportive because we, you know, we build jobs. So when Johnny, you know, like, it's super beneficial to us too, because then the wills come out, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the ideas come out, and if you know we're the ones that are taking the ideas that final step, it's kind of just a pathway into to Bifrost. So you know we've got like definitely want to target this. So not just you know work with you know, Hive because of their eco space, but like, if you have an eco space or you want an ecosystem as a high school where you want to create engineers and train engineers, like we want to create a pathway to keep those kids here, you know?
Right, right.
We have high school kids coming in now for the program that the city set up regularly from Red River and Eastside and Central, and they always seem to have great food, and we're late to the game, but
we're trying
pizza, but
we're setting up that new the new building. We bought the Stray Media building, and we're gonna have a relatively larger maker space in there, and we're kind of gonna just all group them in together. So we're gonna dedicate days when you know kids and
sure
we really want to get into robotics teams, right? We want to
host teams
and competitions, and we want to see, you know, we've created some parts for the UND Rocketry Club, Arc Rocketry, who Will's also a legend.
Oh, God, I forgot about that, too. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, so that was so much fun.
What was the rocket's name that you made?
Oh, Stripe, I think is what.
Yeah. Do they still have it down there?
They did. Yeah, they do. They actually flew it again. Yeah, so one of the, you know, one of the original members and stuff of that group. Yeah, I mean, we built a rocket and stuff. Again, being an archaeologist, anthropologist, like I didn't know what that AG double hockey sticks I was doing.
hockey sticks.
Yeah, I had no idea. But that was so cool.
How big was this rocket?
It's big.
Okay.
Like an Estes motor rocket that you used to put together in Cub Scouts.
No, it's like 8 feet, 10 feet tall.
Oh, okay. You're talking a freaking rocket. Yeah.
I think for a little bit, and I could be wrong. Dr. Young, if you hear me, please don't yell at me, man, if I get this wrong. But in his final configuration, I do believe that it measured 16 feet in length, was two-stage, and had a max thrust of 50,000 Newton forces.
Yeah.
And so this thing could move a semi truck if it you know, wanted to and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I cannot describe that feeling when that rocket went off at the very first time.
Where'd you launch it from?
Oh, God, it had to be somewhere near Amarillo.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Just away from life itself.
Yeah, oh, yeah. You know, that's kind of one of the funny things, too, is, like, we didn't quite think of it and stuff. But, you know, North Dakota has nukes and everything like that, and the Minuteman III's and stuff. And it's like, you know, do we need to talk to Air Force? It's like, are we going to trigger World War III here by trying to, you know, stupidly launch a...
just a college of rockets. Class, so,
So we did it relatively close, and... That thing went off beautifully. It took off. You know, it did everything it was supposed to do, and it landed. You know, fin can up.
No
everything
way.
Just like this most beautiful landing. I'll find the video.
Yeah. And no, like the rocketry guys all knew who he was.
Really?
Yeah. For sure.
Oh my gosh.
Man, for sure.
Okay.
That's one thing I'm like really excited about. Honestly, like you know, we have a whole bunch of other businesses that are really just. Mm-hmm. Kicking right, and one of the really like things that excites me is like what's going to happen over here, right? You know, as I want to, you know, so we have a UND intern right now. His name's Weston.
Oh, and that poor guy. He's
and Weston's fairly bright, right? And he's got really good hard skills.
Yeah.
And so we're gonna kind of team him up with Will and just kind of see what comes out of that R&D office.
Oh,
you know?
Boy,
I
think it's gonna be a lot of fun, man. So I definitely excited about like the turn this took for sure.
And again, I'm going to wait for the winky for you to wink at me if I get a little too much into this. But, you know, one of my areas of interest is those hypersonics, right? I love hypersonics.
If you had to pick one project, like theoretical project right now, what do you think you would do? Would it be hypersonics?
You know, I don't know. So, I mean, a lot of the stuff that I do is out of the necessity or need, you know. We've fallen behind. Against you know China and Russia when it comes to hypersonics and stuff, so I'm like, okay, like this is something I need to work on. This is something you know protecting the U.S. and stuff. So, but I mean, honestly, if I had to pick, I'm going right back to nuclear chemistry, man. Yeah, it's going to go right back to that nuclear reactor and stuff. Which again, if the FBI is listening, I did go through all the requirements and I made sure that everything is within. Everything is safe. So,
yeah,
It's so funny. I've been working on this reactor now probably for 5 years, and I have put probably 98% of my energy into making sure that there is no cascading effect. Yeah, this thing's got so many redundant systems. No wonder why we had to have a huge industrial complex to build these things. The amount of time and energy and, reading, putting papers together and stuff to build a system which everything is going to be contained, fine and safe, is a lot. It's a very robust system. I'm very proud of it. I've tested it a couple of times with different things, so pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, that would be one technology I'd want to go. But
when you talk about the hypersonic missiles, I just get goosebumps. It's like the miracle movie, when you're talking about that, I'm like, USA.
And the thing is, don't get me wrong, hypersonics are fun, but poor Weston now. Maybe about 2 years ago, I kind of moved on. I was like, hypersonics are so, 2020. I kind of want to move on to something a little bit faster and cooler. So him and I are brainstorming on high hypersonics. So I won't say what the speeds are, but I can give you a general idea. But Mach 45. So, developing a system.
We need him at the racetrack.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Incredibly cool, I guess, in my opinion. 1.5, 1 meters in length and, 0.75 meters or 0.5 meters, I guess I should say, in diameter. But, something like that to move at Mach 45, I mean, you have to put a lot of thought and technology into the thing.
So then my questions always goes to, as a community, how do we capture this kind of industry, right, going forward? How do we say, we're gonna be on the front end of things? Because I can talk your ear off, and you've probably heard me screaming on the phone about energy and and production and all that, right? But if we want to say hypothetical engineering, and we want to be on the next stage of these developments and these manufacturers, how do we support that as a community? Is that a conversation we have with UND? Do we the high schools? Do we put these maker spaces everywhere and just see who, what Einsteins come out of the weeds? When you empower the kids that way, what does your brain go to?
I really do think you have to. One of my favorite books, I'm going to murder this name here, Sun Tzu, The Art of War. Don't ever overestimate, not your enemy, but, their capabilities.
Your opponent or whatever.
Be careful about what you think is true and what's not and stuff, because honestly, your solution is going to come from somewhere where you didn't even think it was going to be at. I mean, I would love to see what my high school, guidance counselor would have wagered on me being where I'm at now,
working
on things with DARPA and all these really cool organizations, SETI, NASA, and stuff. I would love to see what they would put against me.
When did it flip? How old were you when it flipped? When they were like, we're going to take you out of the IEP programs and put you in the gift
program. Oh, they never.
Was it just like a, our bad. We're going to put you over here now.
Yeah, they never did. And, not to sound dark and morbid, but they died before I could even get to those.
College? When did that?
College. Yeah, I'm going to say that. The first year I went to college here, I joined the Integrated Studies program, an amazing program. Dr. Carmichael and Dr. Barentine, him and his wife, Dr. Melinda Leach, all these people that picked up on this kid, he's struggling with something. I mean, he's got some disabilities, and they saw that, they knew that, and they were incredibly patient with me, and they did not mind that I would stare at something like I would stare at a science project, a pendulum, for 45 minutes straight, not even lose concentration on any of it. And to them, they're totally fine with it. They're like, go for it. Just learn.
With kids nowadays, and even back in the day, you are the candidate for a big old target on your back for bullying as you were growing up. Did you go through any of that, or did they leave you alone?
They actually left me alone.
It always seems like the smart kids got picked on.
No, they left me alone. My classmates were actually really nice to me.
Cool.
I probably beat myself up more internally than probably they did. I'm not saying that that's for, saying that my experience is, not like everybody else's. I'm pretty sure a lot of kids got bullied out there. But, my classmates are actually pretty supportive. So, they're helpful.
I wanted to ask Aaron this with Bifrost. Is it where you were expecting it to be at this time, above, below? Do you want to give it a grade, an A through an F, for your thoughts so far?
I mean, we're that's really vague, early for a grade. But sure. I'll tell you, man, it is and it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we do a lot for manufacturers in the region. We do a lot of custom tooling. We do a lot of custom one-off projects. We just did a whole bunch of tubs for transformer tubs that are environmentally compliant. So we do big steel too. That's all kind of in line with what we expected. I would say even outperforming it from a business perspective than what we kind of hoped for, right? I think we told the EDC we were going to do 10 jobs in the first year, and we did 19 so far.
Well, the growth potential's got to be just unlimited.
Yeah, man. The scalability of this is really just kind of off the charts. It's as the market need responds, right? But as far as the overperformance side is, it's the theoretical part of this, right? Is the research and development and these new ideas. And I know the guys, right? And I know that the hobbyist side of them, and they have these projects at home. I didn't think that it was going to get the reaction that it did. I didn't think that, Grand Forks is, kind of gearing up to be an epicenter for this kind of activity in the next 10 years, right? Is, we've got, essentially testing areas and, government and Air Force, and everybody's, the drones are here, Northrop's here, Raytheon's here. This is kind of, this is going to be an epicenter. UND is gearing up a big expansion for space, right? Mm-hmm. A hallway for, launching satellites. They're going to do student satellites. So I didn't think I would be involved on that level, right? So I think it's really overperforming there. Just the ideas we talk about are colossal, right? They're not a stainless steel staircase anymore,
Well, the thing is, everything that you guys have been talking about in this hour, you can see the passion. You can see the look in your eyes. This isn't just a job. I mean, this isn't just a career to you guys. This is everything.
Yeah, for sure. And that, that's why I say that's my job, is to keep these guys impassioned, because that's, that's what's going to, I think, going to make the difference, is when you guys have the freedom to make that, substantial problem solver, or, what is actually impactful. Quite honestly, man, I was a cop, right? So, I don't know another job where you're just kind of an axe grinder, right? I did that I wouldn't even call it a 9-to-5, but work all the time for a, non-fulfilling job. And I thought
you're a bartender.
I mean, I wasn't a bartender. I wasn't pretty enough. Oh, I was a bouncer.
Oh, you're the bouncer.
Yeah, it's even worse. I was a big boy, and nobody.
So we did meet a long time ago.
Yeah. Against your will. Yeah, mainly me and Paul, No, I'm kidding. I've done that, man. And to unlock that was, these people's passions, right? So to be supportive and create this environment and where we can create has been, selfishly too. Mm-hmm. I've got the selfish reasons, because I if you told me, hey, listen, man, you could go to prison, or you could go back to policing, I'd be like, man, how long I gotta go?
Yeah.
seriously.
This is all great stuff for the Hive.
Yeah, this is great. But if I'm quiet in this sense, then I'm interested, which is rare that I'm quiet.
It sure is. I like it, though. It's just, I know I'm onto something when Johnny's quiet. There's not even any jokes,
I need to go read some books.
Seriously, I'm coming. I'm coming.
Well, if you guys ever, I just put those books up yesterday. So again, working with Weston and stuff, that poor kid, I brought in my entire weapons, library and stuff. And honestly, it's probably,
we should have a library 5% at the Hive.
He brought in. He's like, I got some ideas.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And he's got some. And he's not just pie in the sky either. There's step by step plans on how we're gonna bring this into reality. And I was like, well, let me see it. And he sits on my desk, and it's like,
wow.
And I was like,
oh, yeah, that poor folder.
I was like, I don't know what
it is. We'll do the mayoral official library.
Yeah, it's like literally. I'm just in there.
Brandon Bochinski Center for Kids to. Get smart.
Get smart. Right. And I'm sure Brandon will endorse that. Come on.
And I just want to say to you, working in this environment, Mike Fruitoff is probably happy that he doesn't have to worry about this or get the 3M text from me anymore. But, this group now, they they do not mind getting a 3M text. It's like, hey, do you think we could probably put this material together with this material? And do you think, you know, we can get it to go like Mach 25? Sure. It's like, what do you guys think about this and stuff? And yeah, it's amazing. I love it. You know, because you never know when a good idea is going to come by.
No.
You know, sometimes I'll wake up and I have a dream. I'm like, oh crap. They're like, that's a really good one. So I got to write that one down now.
See, that always blew my mind. Like how you can have like these big publicly traded companies and that's what they do. They're innovation, right? Like, you know, with a big PubCo comes, you know, bureaucracies.
Yeah.
That always kind of blew my mind. It's like, how can you have a research and development company with that's publicly traded? Like, you've got bean counters and accountants telling you when a good idea is going to come.
Mm.
Like, hey, you know, man, we're going to have you work in 8 to 5 in Grand Forks.
It was that was a struggle. It's a huge struggle, actually, for me. So, yeah, I mean, that's why, you know.
I just like, why do we do that to ourselves? You know, I feel like that's kind of like a recipe.
That's why I became a corporate orphan.
A corporate orphan.
That's what we used to call it. Well, I named that at Target for like the people who just don't quite fit on the team end up being in kind of a kind of their own dev shop. And then everyone was calling it corporate orphans and we'd work on the rogue projects. But
you talk about dreams. I'm going to have dreams about this tonight. It was like for a long time. I mean, especially listening to Will, it was like listening to a foreign language.
Yeah.
You guys, I am familiar with a lot of the stuff you're talking about, but I'm not familiar with a lot of the stuff you were talking about. But you just keep bringing them in, man. This has been really cool. Yeah. I mean, you guys opened my eyes to a lot of things I didn't even know were going on here in Grand Forks. I had no idea. So this is awfully cool.
It's a North Dakota thing, man.
Yeah,
for sure.
Right.
Like, we're super supportive of, you know, startups and, like, new ideas. And I think it's a shame that it, you know, doesn't get enough attention.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the city's putting in a lot of work. You know, everybody is. Like, we're all collectively.
I think a cool thing is I think my father-in-law is a single farmer, farms by himself. If there's a problem, he's got to fix it himself.
Yeah.
And to think, like, he could have some ideas for, like, I got this widget in my head. It would really solve doing this.
100%.
For this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, now he could come in and just throw some ideas at these guys, and they'd be like, what if you did this? And, oh, wow, that, you know, you could actually, like, make it.
Mm-hmm.
And skip the whole process of telling everybody.
It's super impactful, too, because, I mean, what do we have in North Dakota? We have energy, right? We create a ton of energy here. We have ag, and we have oil and gas. So it's like, you know, if you have all the experience and like these super impactful, you know, industries that, you know, these fixes are rolling around.
Well, can you come up with a better hockey stick that can make us better than everyone?
It has to.
And that doesn't cost $500?
Well, they all come from China anyways.
Yeah, yeah, but it has to travel in hypersonic speeds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, this
and it can't cost $500.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
No, it's be like $5,500. Yeah. But it'll, like, we'll light things Dexter on fire.
Yeah, we'll head to Dexter's laboratory. As long as I can get the sign-off from Killian to look into this, yes, we can
at some point, we'll give you lunch, don't worry.
Yeah. 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 If somebody wants to get a hold, you know, if they're looking at Bifrost, if they get a hold of you guys, let's go through it. How do we reach you guys?
Email.
Okay.
So I'll just tell you
road flares.
A quick story. Yeah, if you just get out and like do the T-Rex thing.
Do the bat signal. Yeah, yeah.
But no, so, you know, I'll just tell you a quick story because it helps people remember. My name is Aaron. My last name is Hall. When I started as a police officer, on my badge was A. Hall. So I was Officer A. Hall. And my chief walked in and looked at it and went, that's not your name. And I was like, no, that's my name. I was like, well, we can't have that for you know, obvious reasons. Well, my email is ahall@sundogmining or at Bifrost Manufacturing.
That's so awesome.
A. Hall. You got A. Hall, you got it.
That's awesome. And how about you?
Aaron.
Aaron.
So I'm just, I'm like, what, day three? Working at Bifrost.
Oh, you knew.
He's like, in our defense, has he been over there for a while? Like,
yeah.
He's well-known
today.
Being the you know, the poor Tony Stark, I was rifling through all their garbage.
I heard you were new. I didn't know this.
I was pretty new. It's like
Will Swearson. Swearson.
Oh, W. Swearson. All right, W. Swearson at Bifrost Manufacturing.
All right.
Right? Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
W. Swearson.
Okay.
All right. Johnny Fingers, Johnny Ryan, how do we get a hold of you? How do we get a hold of the Hive?
You can just go to hivegf.com and just send a message through there. It comes to us.
Okay. Any idea who's coming with you next in 2 weeks?
Not yet, but
I'll
give you a little bit of heads up so we can hype it a little bit more. But yeah, these guys are good.
This was
good
awesome.
For me asking them last night because our other one. this worked out really well, but threw Will to the wolves here, being brand new to Bifrost. But I knew this would happen. I had this vision that we'd just wing it.
It did well.
Will is always interesting.
So, yeah.
Like, thanks, Aaron.
Just wait till the Morpheus coming.
What am I?
All right, guys, we are out of time. That is it for this week's edition of Drones, Code, and People. I'd like to thank Johnny. I'd like to thank Aaron and Will for being here. And I don't know if Johnny will be back in 2 weeks or it'll be Tommy Kenville or not, but I'm really looking forward to 2 weeks from today. Thank you all for joining us.